Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome to the Inside Lacrosse Division III Podcast. I'm Zach Babbo. Today we're talking with Lynchburg head coach Steve Kadelka. Kadelka's Hornets currently sit at number 8 in the polls at 6-1 and 3-0 in the ODAC. They started the season with a bang with a big 13-12 upset victory over defending national champ Salisbury. But they have a daunting task ahead of them this week with games against ODAC rival Washington and Lee and national power Stevenson up in Baltimore. Before we get to our interview with Kadelka, I want to thank everybody who's followed along with the podcast thus far. You can find us on InsideLacrosse.com or in the iTunes store under Inside Lacrosse. Feel free to contact me about the podcast at ZBabbo at Inside Lacrosse or on Twitter at Zach Babbo, ZACHBABO. Now let's get to our conversation with Lynchburg coach Steve Kadelka. All right, we're now joined by Lynchburg coach Steve Kadelka. Coach, you guys are entering, you guys are doing pretty well so far this year. Obviously 6-1, 3-0 in the ODAC so far. I believe you sit number 8 overall in the USILA poll currently. But obviously you're heading into a tough week here with ODAC rival Washington and Lee tomorrow, and then coming down to the ball, or up rather, to the Baltimore area to play Stevenson on Saturday in another big South Region game. I guess maybe, you know, we'll kind of look forward before we start looking back here. You know, what are your thoughts kind of entering this pretty daunting week ahead?
Yeah, well, it's been a daunting couple of weeks, to be honest. You know, this is our 5th and 6th straight road game. You know, and I've been doing this quite a few years. I don't remember having 6 away games. You know, went to Gettysburg. We went to McDaniel, and then went to Guilford and Bridgewater, and now, you know, we have to go over to Washington and Lee on Wednesday night and then make the trip up to Stevenson over the weekend. So that's, you know, those are 6 pretty good games on the road, and, you know, it would be nice to finally just change in our own locker room next week. But no doubt about it. I mean, it's, you know, it's exciting, I think. You know, I think our guys are, you know, we try to put the best schedule together that we can. And it just so happened that our bye week in the ODAC conference was this weekend, coming up Easter weekend. And, you know, we were able to get Stevenson on that game, which was nice. We usually played them early in the year, but they, with them changing conferences. So it's, you know, yeah, so WNL is going to be a great opponent. You know, tomorrow night, they've had a great year so far. You know, we kind of knew they would. They really came on late last year. And, you know, all their guys that played against last year in the ODAC championship game pretty much are back. You know, I think, you know, maybe, you know, a handful of their starters were back from that game, and they're just a year older and, you know, and a year better. And so that, you know, really not too much of a surprise, the success that they had. I got a lot of respect for their, you know, just for their program and Gene McCabe and the job that he does. And then, you know, then Stevenson has been one of the best teams in the, you know, the Southern region over the last several years. And that will be, you know, quite a contest as well, I'm sure.
One of the kind of the interesting things almost with WNL and that game coming up is that you guys sit pretty much back-to-back in the poll right now, and you also have a common, very big win on your schedule in both you're able to steal one-goal wins against Salisbury. In some ways, does that common opponent maybe help give you an idea of maybe what WNL has this year, or you know, the strengths or weaknesses, you know, above and beyond just the typical kind of conference knowledge you would have?
Well, you know, we both played we both played Salisbury, you know, to a one goal win, and then I think we both beat Franklin and Marshall by 2 goals, you know, so there is some similarity there, and you know, and I, you know, I agree with what you're saying in terms of just, you know, the ability to kind of watch films and analyze opponents and all that good stuff. I mean, you know, you try to take as much of that, you know, as way as you can. But every team plays different. You know, we play different than Salisbury does. We play different than Franklin and Marshall does. And so you try to you try to look at some of the similarities. But, you know, usually, you know, I think going into these games, the biggest thing that we can do is just really, and something we harp on all the time with our guys, is just we have a certain brand of lacrosse that we try to play. And if we feel like we can play that, you know, for a majority of the game, if not all of the game, then we have a great shot at winning, you know. And if we're not able to do that, then there's probably a good chance we'll lose. So, so from an opponent standpoint, we do our scouting reports and do all that good stuff. But really, at the end of the day, we really try to put a lot of our time and energy into what we're trying to do and how we're trying to do it.
obviously, you know, that Salisbury win grabbed a lot of attention early in the year. I mean, yeah, Salisbury, you know, graduated a ton of players, but they're still defending champions. They're still Salisbury, which is, you know, perennial top five power, you know, perennial top one or two, it seems, in the South. I mean, what was that like to kind of get the year started in such a banner win?
You know, it was definitely, you know, it's nice to beat those guys. You know, they've been, we've played them early in the year for the last several years, and obviously everyone knows the success that they had. And, you know, and I think, you know, as we went into that game and just really went into the season, you know, we, like I just said earlier, we really, you know, were trying to concentrate on what we were doing, and we didn't know a lot about Salisbury. They only played one game before us against Greensboro. So it was really nice actually leading into that game where we can just really put, you know, we wanted to, you know, play the style that we wanted to play. And I think we were able to do that for a lot of that game, you know, and I don't, you know, and luckily some of those shots went in, and we, you know, we got some pretty good defense, I thought, at times in that game, and really won some timely faceoffs against, you know, arguably one of the best kids in the country at that position, and with some newer faceoff guys. So that was kind of nice, you know, and I think, but, you know, my 8-year-old son said it the best when we got home that night. You know, my wife said, you know, man, you know, said to him, you know, Dad just had a, you know, kind of was a great win, and, you know, kind of made a little bit bigger deal out of it. And my son, you know, who was around the team most of the day that day, said, you know what, Mom, everybody on that team expected to win today. And it was kind of poignant for an 8-year-old to say that. And I think, you know, something he'd heard us say in the locker room, you know, that was, we expected to win that game. And, you know, so it did get a lot of fanfare, and for all the right reasons. You know, Salisbury's had such a great team. But at the same time, I think our guys, you know, if we didn't believe we were going to win that game beforehand, there's no way we would have been able to do it. And I think that was spoken. I was really proud of our guys for stepping up when they needed to that game.
You mentioned that kind of, you know, you guys expected to win that game. I feel like Salisbury is a program that so many teams can kind of at times measure themselves against in terms of mm-hmm. how they do. You know, if you do wind up beating that team, in some ways, did you learn anything new about your team from that game? I mean, everybody kind of has that confidence going into every game. I would hope that you think you can win it, but there's a certain bravado you can walk out with such a big win like that, and generally with kind of the growing positive trajectory of this team over the past about two seasons here. You know, is that kind of a harbinger for anything to come, maybe in a 2013 season, to have that confidence and to do so well in a first game against such a tough opponent?
Well, I think, you know, last year we lost to them the first game, you know, 2012, and then we won 17 straight games. So, you know, until we lost, you know, in the playoffs to Denison. And so realistically, since the last time we played them, we were 17-1, you know, and I don't think that there were many teams that probably had a better record, you know, over that time frame than we did. And our guys kind of knew that, you know, and we had graduated a lot of great seniors, you know, from that last year's team, but we also knew that we had some guys that were ready to step up and that kind of were waiting in the wings for their opportunity. And I think that's exactly what happened that day. Some of those younger guys that probably weren't on a Salisbury scouting report and you know, probably weren't, you know, known entities at that time because we had not played anybody. And I think that was probably the most promising thing that came out of that day was we had a bunch of guys step up and a bunch of guys played some really huge games for us, you know, and made some great plays, whether they resulted in goals or assists or just great, you know, defensive plays or a goalie played great. And that was the first game he'd started. You know, and that's kind of what you need in those big games. And you know, something we, you know, we harp on a lot around here is in these big games, and we have a lot of them. You know, our best players need to play their best in the biggest games. And, you know, and that was something that happened that day. And I think you're exactly right. I think it gave us the confidence to play, you know, great the next weekend against Franklin and Marshall and Cabrini and, you know, even Gettysburg, and even though we lost that game, I thought we played at times really, really well in that game. So I think it definitely has allowed us the ability to say, you know what, we're better than maybe some people thought we were going to be because we graduated some guys and we had some guys injured not playing. And that's, you know, that's kind of a testament to our players and how hard they work to get ready for that, you know, that game at that time during the year.
We'll jump into actually some of that injury stuff in a minute, but I mean, I guess kind of in thinking of those ways of kind of, you know, the team growing year to year. I mean, you guys have had a pretty solid trajectory for the past about two, three seasons here. 2011, you have a 13-game win streak, which was at the time the longest in program history. Yep. You make the NCAAs. You personally win ODAC Coach of the Year. You get 16 wins, which is the most in program history. You get your first ever NCAA win. Then in 2012, you kind of top all of that a little bit in terms of you get 17 wins in a season, a 16-game win streak. You actually win the ODAC outright. Right. You make the NCAAs, though you drop the game to Denison. Yep. I guess, you know, is there something building from those 2 years that may feel it carries out in this year or feels poised to maybe carry out
yeah.
this year?
Well, I would say one quick – I mean, in 11, we did not make the NCAA tournament.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We had a great run. We lost in the ODAC championship game and just missed out on one of the Pool C bids that year. But I really thought it, you know, really started to kind of I mean, you know, we've had these stretches, you know, where I think we've had some great, you know, great teams. Like I thought, you know, 05 through 08, we, you know, made the tournament three different times. And, you know, 05 were in the ODAC or in the quarterfinals that year and lose by a goal. But, you know, I thought we were close, you know, really close in 10 and 11. And last year we kind of kicked the door down, not only to win the conference championship, but I think we also won some of those bigger games, you know, beating Stevenson and, you know, we beat Roanoke last year, a team that, you know, we had not beaten for a couple of years there. And so those are some of the wins that we, you know, you kind of have to have, you know, I mean, our guys get it, you know, I mean, we're not, you know, we understand that if you want to be considered one of the best teams in the country, you consistently have to win the big games. You know, you have to take care of the games that you should win. And then some of these games, like we have, you know, this weekend with, you know, this week with WNL and Stevenson and, you know, Salisbury's and Gettysburg's and those guys, you have to win a majority of those games. You know, that's what the great teams do at any level, in any sport. And so we've kind of, you know, I thought last year was really a great year from a mindset standpoint, you know. You know, record speaks for itself, but I really felt like winning some of those bigger games last year and kind of winning the ODAC championship again and really kind of setting the tone for our younger kids. You know, our freshmen now, that's all they know, you know, and our sophomores, that's all they know, our incoming freshmen who are freshmen right now, they get it. You know, they were coming into a program that had a great year. And so it kind of just adds a little bit more to everything that you do, you know, whereas in the past we were kind of saying, hey, this is what we can do. Last year we kind of did it, but we all know that there's more to do. You know, the job is, you know, we've not finished what we really want to do, and that's to compete for a national championship.
Obviously, you know, winning that ODAC crown again is a pretty tall task. Particularly, I guess it seems WNL looks like they're having a good year. Roanoke and Hamden Sydney are kind of, you know, right there poised to be very competitive. Yep. The bottom half of the league still, you know, gives a hard game. What is your sense of kind of that, the balance of power, I guess you could say, amongst the ODAC, or how difficult of a slate that may or may not be this year?
Yeah, you know, I think it's I definitely think, you know, we talked a little bit about WNL earlier, and I think they're having a great year, and their record and everything stands for itself. I think, you know, a team like Roanoke, a team like Hamden Sydney, who you know, might have a couple losses on their slate right now, but you know, watching them play, we got a chance this weekend to watch them play live. You know, they're coming around. You know, and I think, like any other team, you know, you don't want to be playing your best in early March. You know, some of those games you're still figuring out personnel, you're still figuring out who's starting, what lines are running with whom. You know, I think when we get to the middle part of April and the latter part of April, you know, I think that's when, you know, the Roanoke and Hamp Sydney and even some of the other teams like Randolph-Macon and Virginia Wesleyan, they're going to be much better, you know, than they are maybe what people perceive to be right now. You know, for some reason, you know, I mean, I thought we've had some great, you know, wins versus some other really strong conference opponents. And, you know, as a conference and the conference coaches, I think that's something that we all, you know, whenever someone's playing against, like if we're playing against FNM or WNL is playing against FNM, you're rooting for, you know, your conference teams to win those games, you know, and because that's kind of how at the end of the year your strength of schedule and some of that stuff is based. So I've been really fortunate this year. I think that I know, you know, from, you know, Randolph College this weekend, for example, just won their first ODAC champ or ODAC play, regular season game, you know, and that's a huge win over Shenandoah, who's a new team in the program, a new team in the conference. But that's, it just kind of speaks to how the, how we're getting better, you know, on all 10 teams are getting better, which is exciting to see.
Does kind of the regionality of the ODAC influence the beginning of the season in terms of, you know, you guys are all in the South where you hope the weather's a little better, and maybe you can get going with some things earlier in the year? I guess I talked to Mike Daly last week, you know, up at Tufts, between the conference, you know, the conference restrictions of the NESCAC and the bad weather in the Northeast, sometimes it's hard for teams to get rolling early in the year. You know, obviously, maybe those same kind of constraints don't exist in the South as much in terms of, you know, bad weather, limited practice availability, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, how does maybe the being in the South, being in kind of southwestern Virginia, you know, kind of help or influence the way you can get ready for a season, the way you can get rolling into the early weeks?
Well, I think the benefit down here, there's no doubt about it, that the weather is definitely different than it is, and you know, we're coaches at the Tufts, you know, at least we like to think that, you know, but realistically, you know, what's really neat about it, I think it almost kind of breaks the season up into two different groups. You know, you have your, you know, you have your preseason, and then those first, you know, bit of games, you know, which is really, you know, from the end of January to the beginning of March, you know, and then spring break comes, you play a couple of games over that, and that's kind of its own little separate entity. And then you get into this season where we are right now. You know, you're mostly ODAC games right now. You know, you're playing a lot of Wednesday, Saturday games, which is a little unique, whereas early in the year, you're probably playing more Saturday kind of formats. But I think, you know, I think the one thing that I think we have to do down here, which is not easy to do, and you know, is kind of balance the year out. You know, last week, you know, we played Saturday against Guilford, and that was the very end of spring break. And last week we took two full days off. You know, we didn't practice Tuesday or Wednesday, and you know, we didn't play again until Sunday. So it was just kind of nice for us to give the guys some time to get away, get out of the locker room a little bit, and you know, just stay away from the game, rest our legs. And I thought we came back on Thursday's practice last week with just a ton of energy, and guys had just a renewed freshness to them. You know, we'll do that a couple other times here later in this, you know, later in the season, just to keep our guys fresh. So I think there's, you know, I think every school has its challenges. Every school has its uniqueness to its scheduling and how that all works out. And I think, I'm sure the NESCAC folks have it figured out, you know, how they want to do things. I think, you know, we've had a pretty good beat on it, I think, in years lately, but, I think the biggest thing is, there's no doubt about it. I mean, if you're practicing every day, the thought and the idea is to be better every single day that you go out and practice, you know, and if your guys have the right focus and the right mindset and you're not, you know, crushing them all the time, I think you can accomplish that. And then hopefully on game days, you put a better product on the field, you know, and that's kind of been always our task at hand, is to play better. You know, we hope we play better here tomorrow night, you know, than we did Sunday against Bridgewater. And that's because we've had, you know, hopefully had, you know, a couple of good practices leading into that game.
Does it feel like the team is kind of maturing like that as the season goes on here? I mean, you know, especially almost as you guys, after the Stevenson game, you're going to more or less be done with your non-conference slate, right, and leave just the conference ahead of you. I mean, have you seen things maybe grow and improve through that non-conference slate that you feel is, you know, showing the evolution of a team through a season?
Absolutely. You know, I think we're a lot better today, you know, than we were when we played Salisbury, you know, whether it's, you know, some of the stuff that we're doing on offense or defense, or just, you know, just having more options to go to. But I think the biggest thing is that, you know, we're very, you know, for the most part, we're really healthy. I think we're in great shape. You know, the guys are very fit. You know, we seem to be very, you know, upbeat with everything. And I think at the end of the day, I mean, I think that's just at this time of year, that's a huge thing, you know? And I think the way we've played these last two games, you know, I think we've really, I thought we've played pretty well, you know, and we kind of, you know, it was really nice. You know, we played McDaniel a couple weeks ago. We beat them 5-4. And I think we've seen McDaniel give some other teams some pretty hard runs, you know, and Matt does a great job with that group. And now, you know, now we're, you know, we go play Guilford, and we kind of just played, and Guilford's, I think, a much improved team, but we played pretty well against them, you know, and I think we finally, I think kind of like I said earlier, we have these different parts of the season. I think in different parts of the season, you have different barriers you have to go through. And for us, you know, we struggled a little bit against Gettysburg. You know, we struggled a little bit against McDaniel, but that was kind of, you know, we were trying to push some things into our guys through practice. And then finally against Guilford, it kind of broke through, you know, and then we saw it carry over last week in the practices that we had leading up to Bridgewater. And now we're hoping, you know, at this time of year, we're able to add a whole new, you know, dimension to our game, which will be exciting.
I guess, you know, part of that kind of evolving over the course of the season is dealing with things that come up, you know, challenges as they arise in the season. And probably the biggest challenge that seems to have hit your team this year is the loss of Joe Lisicki due to injury. I mean, Joe was, you know, pretty well known throughout the lacrosse community, not just in the D3 world. You know, here at IL, we touted him pretty highly in terms of, you know, first-team All-American, you know, potentially player of the year in D3. I mean, he's obviously, you know, a phenomenal defenseman. He can carry the ball. You know, he makes plays in the middle of the field. Can you talk a little about, you know, losing Joe and how the team has kind of responded? Maybe also, you know, how Joe has responded. I mean, this was, I believe, his senior year, right? It's obviously going to be hard to not be playing, or does he have plans to try and, you know, maybe petition for another year or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's... you know, we're still working out some of the stuff about what he's thinking about doing for next year. You know, that's still in the works. But, you know, I would say, you know, a couple of things. Number one, I think Joe has been, you know, Joe's an athlete, you know, and he's competitive, and, you know, he's one of, you know, he's a great, great student as well. And, you know, so he's, you know, it's been difficult for him. There's no doubt about it, you know, but with that being said, I think Joe also is kind of, you know, understand, okay, he's still a captain of this team. And he still provides, you know, as much valuable input as he can to some of the younger guys who are kind of trying to, you know, to play some of the positions that he did. But it's hard, you know. I mean, I don't care what team you are, what level you're at. You know, you lose someone, I think, that was as good as Joe Lisicki was on the lacrosse field. You're going to miss that. You know, there's no doubt about that. And we'd be, you know, I would be very, I'd probably be lying if I said we don't miss him. You know, we would love to have him in uniform right now playing. But, you know, things happen for a reason, and he's not able to suit up for us, you know, and he won't be able to play the rest of this year. So you know, how we handle that, I think that's also been, you know, pretty cool for our guys in terms of we've been pretty much lucky over the years not to have too many injuries, you know, and I can't remember having a player of Joe's caliber be injured and miss an entire year, you know, like we're having. So our guys, I think it speaks a lot to our senior class, and they've been able to kind of step up and you know, at least carry some of Joe's weight a little bit around the locker room and on the field and everything. And at the same time, you know, it's given, you know, you want to say you have depth, you want to say you have players to step up. And we've had a couple of guys really step up and play, I think, you know, a great role for us on the defensive end, you know, and that's been exciting, you know, and those are kind of the guys that we've been working with. And it's been enjoyable as a coach, you know, to kind of, you never want to hear the news we heard about Joe. There's no doubt about that. But then you know, when you go to the next day and you kind of say, okay, this is the hand we have right now. You know, we don't have Joe anymore. What are we going to do? That's been kind of really exciting for, you know, John Lombardo, one of my assistants who kind of does a lot of the defensive stuff, to kind of really, you know, put some new pieces together for this puzzle, you know, and figure out how can we do this and how can we do that now that Joe is gone. And that's kind of the, you know, that's kind of the approach that we've taken. And I think our guys who we've asked to step up have stepped up. And we, you know, I think if you would have told a lot of people that Lynchburg College would be 7-1, you know, at this time of year and the schedule we've played, and Joe Lisicki's not going to have his hand in any of that, that'd be a tough thing to sell to people, you know. So we've been very fortunate that our guys have stepped up, and I think that's, once again, I mean, I couldn't be more prouder of how the guys have responded to that, and just said, you know what, okay, next man up, let's go, let's play.
I guess, you know, looking at the other side of the field now, you know, it seems kind of funny to me almost in all these podcasts I've been doing. I've been talking to almost every D3 coach a little bit about the rules and how, you know, the rule changes anyway for this season and how almost everybody seems to feel that, you know, oh, yeah, it's a little different, but let's face it, you know, most D3 programs, or it seems most of the D3 programs I've talked to, like to kind of play an up-tempo style and whatnot anyway. I mean, you guys so far this year are averaging almost 15 goals a game. You're averaging almost 45 shots a game. You know, have you seen any kind of a factor in terms of rules influencing how you guys have played on that end of the field, or on any end of the field, I guess, for that matter? Or has this kind of been, you know, yeah, the same, you know, kind of approach the Hornets have always wanted to take from season to season?
I mean, we've always, you know, I think you know, over the year, I mean, I'm a big believer that this game has been meant to be played this way. You know, I think it's what attracted me to it when I was a little kid. You know, it was just, it's an athletic game, and the guys who have the best stick skills are usually the, and they combine that with the best athleticism are usually the best lacrosse players, you know. And I think, you know, growing up and watching the Gates play and, you know, people like that, I mean, they were not only great lacrosse players because of the great stick skills, but man, they were awesome athletes, you know? And so we've always tried to get our team to play as much to that as we can. You know, obviously you play to the strengths of your personnel, but over the years in recruiting, it's been one of our major points of emphasis is we're trying to recruit athletes who happen to be very good lacrosse players, you know, and not the opposite. And so we've been very fortunate to that. So I think the style that the game is now lending itself to, you know, quick whistles, quick restarts. You know, you don't want to hold the ball forever because you're going to get the stall call, things like that. Those are all things that we've always tried to do. And, you know, I don't think we've had a couple of timer on situations this year, but some of that is when teams play, you know, just happen to be playing great defense against you. It's not for a lack of trying to get to the goal. That's for sure. But I love the new rules. I think it's a step in the right direction. You know, I think, and I think that's something that the committee did a great job of trying to address some of these things. And it's just really, I think, made for a much better brand of lacrosse. And you see kids more going up and down the field more, kind of two-way middies. And, you know, sometimes you have attackmen going over to play defense because that's just what they have to be doing at that time. There's being athletes, you know, I think that's kind of what we're trying to tell our guys. You know, you just got to play lacrosse. You know, this is it's a game of lacrosse. It's not. We're trying not to make this a specific, you know, role or a specific, you know, position has to do certain things all the time. You know, you got to be willing to do a lot of different things, and I think that kind of makes it. The new rules have allowed that to happen, which has been pretty cool for the sport, I think.
I guess, you know, we talked about the solid offensive numbers you guys have had, but one of the things that I guess kind of jumped out to me is despite, you know, the offensive production, it seems you guys are struggling a little bit on the man up early in the year. Is that a point of concern at all for the team? Is that something you just think will kind of evolve as the season goes, or maybe is based more around the opponents you've played, or is that maybe something you've noticed too and it's something, you know, you and your coaches have decided to maybe tinker with or work on as the season's progress?
Well, you know, I think there's a couple factors there. I think, you know, sometimes numbers can be pretty deceiving, you know, and I think, and I know earlier at one time we were like 3 for 20, you know, and we went back as a coaching staff and kind of looked at all those man ups and, you know, I would say 17 out of 18, those we had multiple shots, you know, multiple really good shots at the cage, through some of the stuff we were doing man up wise and they just didn't go in, you know, you know, and then it's funny. Then you go 6-on-6, and you know, 2 minutes later, and you have the same amount of opportunities from the same spot on the field, and you score goals. You know, and so I think part of it, you know, for our guys is just, and we've had some new guys. You know, we got a couple of younger guys playing on that. You know, a couple of freshmen right now, and I just think having them understand that, you know, this is something that we've tried to harp on with our guys, just like we do man down. You know, there's an attitude to playing man down, and everyone kind of, I think every coach in the country would agree with that, you know. I think we've tried to get our guys to understand there's got to be an attitude to playing man up. You know, they can be crucial goals in the game, you know. But what I liked about our man up earlier, for even though we didn't have great success, maybe in scoring, we had great success in maintaining the ball, you know. And, you know, after a minute penalty, 30-second penalty, the penalty gets released. We still have possession of the ball. We're okay with that. You know, where I think you get frustrated is when your shots are end up being saves or you're turning the ball over on a bad pass. Those are the times that we've really kind of probably harped on our guys, you know, to kind of get better at. But, you know, we just kind of started to click. And I think over the last couple of games we're, you know, I want to say we're like, you know, 5 for 7 or something, you know, or maybe even a little bit better than that. And so, you know, we'll have a little bit more, maybe like 6 or 9 or 7 out of 9. So we're getting better, you know, and, you know, I think there's, as long as you're getting the shots that you want, you know, that's the, you know, like you said, we're taking 45 shots a game. That doesn't mean we're scoring 45 goals a game. You know, I mean, you got to understand that everyone does. And so as long as we're getting the shots we want out of those man-up situations, at some point they're going to fall, you know, and that's what we're hoping is going to happen, at least down the road.
That seems a pretty measured analysis of kind of, you know, how to look at those stats compared to maybe what they mean in terms of efficiencies. I guess it kind of trends into, you know, one of the more popular discussions now is, you know, what are the real stats to look at to try and determine success rates for teams? Is it, you know, are face-offs it? Is it ground balls? Is it shot percentage? Is it, you know, offensive efficiency in terms of goals per possession or shots per possession? I guess, you know, in any of that, I mean, are you maybe leaning towards any of those ideas above all, or do you not really worry about the stat picture generally, and it's more of an eye test of, you know, you look at your team, you see how they're playing, and you can kind of just get a feel from game to game, from looking at tape, you know, your efficiency rates, your success rates, and the numerical equations of that kind of stuff don't really factor too much?
Well, I think, you know, if you win every faceoff, you know, and you score on every shot and you never let in any goals, you're going to win every game. You know, I know that, you know, but other than that, you know, there's some great things that happen in our sport. You know, you got a goalie, number one, which, you know, we've all seen those games where the goalie just stands on his head and plays great and really can change the dynamic of a game. You know, you have games where, you know, you might win all the faceoffs, but you go down and then you throw it out of bounds, you know. So there's, you know, you can ride a team pretty well. You can clear the ball pretty well. I mean, there's so many factors. That's what's kind of, you know, I know we want to be, I understand, because I kind of like statistics myself. There's such a statistical entity to our sport right now, people trying to figure in all these numbers. But I do think, you know, I think at the end of the day, if you have the possessions that you have, however many they are during the game, whether it's 25 or 35, depending on who you're playing or what the game type is, you know, if you can get, you know, great shots out of those possessions, that's something that we really harp on with our guys. You know, we want to take the best shot we possibly can. You know, a 15-yard shot on the run for us is not a great shot, you know, and our guys know that, and teams that watch us with know that. So, you know, how can we get the best shot that we possibly can? And then defensively, you know, let's try to give up the worst shot we possibly can. You know, I think that's a pretty standard thought process there too. So I like the fact that people are really looking at statistics. I think it's going to take a little more time to figure things out. I think in the old days it was, you know, ground balls was everything and faceoffs were everything. I think the way the new rules are, you know, you're starting to figure out that maybe those aren't as important, or maybe they don't have the statistical correlation as they once had. So it's kind of interesting to see how that plays itself out, you know. But I think if, as most teams do, you have a certain style that you like to play, you have certain factors that you think are going to make your team successful. I think once you find those out, then you really harp on those with your guys, and that's what really allows you to be the most successful team you possibly can. And for some teams, it might be slowing things up, might be speeding it up. But I think that's probably the most important thing, is have an understanding to what makes your team the best it possibly can be.
Yeah, that kind of idea, I guess, I mean, that seems very mature, you know, perspective kind of idea in terms of evaluating a team. And, you know, I guess that makes a lot of sense. You've been at Lynchburg since 1997. You know, you've been around the program for a while. I mean, have you kind of seen, or have your opinions on kind of how to evaluate your team and what makes a good team or not? I mean, how have you kind of maybe seen that evolve in your time at that university for so long now?
Yeah, you know, I think... You know, what I think I'm probably the most proud of in my time here is that, you know, right now in 2013, you know, our best players on the field, the kids who play the most for us, the kids that start, the kids that play a lot, you know, are the kids that work the hardest. Plain and simple. You know, our starting attackmen, those guys are, you know, those guys do great when we do testing in the weight room or running or whatever it is that we're asking them to do as far as tests and measurements are concerned. They do great, you know, and I think I'm, you know, for me, that kind of embodies a little bit about what this program is all about. You know, we're asking our guys to, you know, I think this is a great school to go to. I think it's awesome. It's one of the best sports to play, obviously. And I think there's a lot of merit in having kids, you know, who want to be great. You know, the Joe Lisicki wants to be a first team All-American. He wants to win a national championship. You know, we have a lot of other guys on our team that have the exact same thought. And how do you get there? You have to work hard at it. You know, you have to go out and shoot those extra buckets of balls. You have to go lift weights. You have to do footwork. Yeah. You have to do all those things. And a lot of that at our level in Division III is on their own time. And so when we get them into the spring season, we're starting first day of spring practice and we're doing tests and we're seeing how the guys have done in the off season. It's awesome for me to sit there and look, see our best kids and sit down and show even like recruits. And we have this big board in our locker room that has all our kind of data on it. Say, these are our starters. These are the guys that are 190 pounds and bench pressing their body weight X amount of times and running a mile and X amount of, you know, this fast. And we don't have guys that are playing for us that are guys that are just getting by because they're really good on the lacrosse field. But as a coaching staff, we're kind of looking the other way because they're, you know, they just don't work that hard, but they're really good. We want them on the field. And so for me, you know, when I go out to practice every day at 4 o'clock and I know I got a bunch of guys on that field that are going to work their tail off and have been working their tail off and are chomping at the bit to go to practice. I mean, what else do I really want? You know, I mean, it really makes it an enjoyable, you know, it's kind of motivating for me to come through the doors and go on the practice field and say, let's go, you know, and it's a fun 2 hours or an hour and a half or whatever it is we're going. And it's intense and the guys go at it hard and, you know, they get after each other. And, you know, sometimes we have like fights in practice and between each other, but you know, at the end of the day, the guys, those same two guys are going to eat dinner together, you know, and it's like a bunch of brothers, you know, it's like, you know, my brother, I had an older brother and we would, you know, we'd play street hockey in the driveway and, you know, usually I would be the guy that ended up bleeding because he was 7 years older than me. But, you know, at the end of the day, we'd be sitting at dinner, and I know if another kid came into our driveway to play street hockey, you know, it was me and my brother versus that kid, you know. And it's no different. That's the kind of persona we want when we go onto the field is let's practice as hard as we can during the week, and then let's go play whoever it is. It doesn't matter who it is, and let's see what happens. You know, hopefully we win. But if we're going to go out there and play as hard as we can, we like our chances, and that's really all we can control, you know.
And, Coach, I guess I'll kind of let that idea segue into, I mean, it sounds like, you know, you guys, or at least your program really values, you know, kind of fiery, competitive, hard-nosed, you know, hard-working kind of guys. I feel mm-hmm. almost every coach I've talked to in these podcasts, I've kind of had a bit where, you know, you kind of tell either, you know, sell your school to a recruit mm-hmm. as if I were a recruit, yeah. or maybe vice versa, of, you know, if you can almost describe what the ideal, you know, Lynchburg prospect would be in terms of, you know, an attitude, a work ethic, a skill level, a what have you.
Yeah, I think, you know, what I said earlier really – probably, you know, those are all the characteristics that we're looking for. There's no doubt about it. You said fiery, you know, I like to use the word passionate. You know, I think, it boils down to, you know, wanting to be the best. You know, we try to stay away from kids that just want to be on this team. You know, we want kids that want to be starters. We want kids that want to hear their name over the loudspeaker, you know, 5 minutes before the game starts, because that's where the 10 starters are announced, you know, and I think there's something, I really do think there's something to be said for that. And those are the kind of kids that we're trying to attract here. You know, the kids that really, you know, play this game at a level that it deserves. You know, I've talked a lot about this with a lot of people. You know, I think this is such a unique sport that, you know, you play this sport, and if you really think about it, you know, here we are, these guys are playing lacrosse and they're getting whacked, and kind of the nature of our sport is to almost wear less equipment, you know, which to the outsider would seem like you know, I played goalie and it, you know, you just wore like a cup and a chest protector and gloves and a helmet and that was it, you know, and why not wear shin pads and thigh pads? You know, what are you thinking? But there's such a kind of courageous aspect to this sport that that was handed, you know, given to us a long, long time ago, you know, in the ancestors of the sport, that it's kind of cool to play, you know, and I think you have to honor that and you have to play that way. And those, you know, so when you go, you know, you go out recruiting, and you're talking to kids, I mean, you know, we try to find those kids that are the most passionate about playing the sport, because I think when you're there, the other stuff is pretty easy. Lifting weights, the running, the stuff that a lot of people think are sacrifices. We kind of think of that as being, that's passion. You know, you think of all these coaches that spend all this time on the road and watching film and all that. Oh, you're sacrificing. You're not really sacrificing. It's what you're really passionate about, you know, and that's awesome. You know, just like I'm passionate, you know, about a lot of other things. But it's pretty neat to see those kids when you can find those kids and they come into Lynchburg College, which is a great school. And I think it's, you know, we have an outstanding athletic department, and I think we're a sport here that, you know, is a big deal to Lynchburg College. And we have a lot of other great teams that are making NCAAs and winning conference championships as well. So I think you come into an environment that is very much a, you know, hey, if you're going to work hard, you're going to probably see a lot of rewards for that. And, you know, and I think at that age, you get a lot out of that. You know, 18 to 22 years old, you can really leave here at 22 years old, I think, and really take a lot of stuff that you've done with you and move on to your next chapter of your life, which is really what we're all hoping, I think, we prepare our guys for, you know, no doubt about it.
All right, Coach, and I guess I'll kind of get us out on a little bit of a self-indulgent kind of goof for me here. One of the funny things, or I guess interesting things I saw in your bio online was that you're a Long Valley, New Jersey native.
Yep.
And I actually grew up not too far away from there myself. I grew up in Hunterdon County in a little town called Highbridge, and played my lacrosse at Voorhees High School under Paul Shanklin. Obviously, I'm a bit younger than you, but so I guess I'm kind of curious, you know, if you can kind of maybe briefly tell me a little bit about what the lacrosse scene that you kind of came out of in central New Jersey in the late 80s and early 90s was like, and maybe how it influenced, you know, the coach you are today now.
Yeah, well, I went to Westmore Central High School, you know, and I was very fortunate enough to I played three sports there. I played soccer and basketball and lacrosse, and I was really probably the best thing that happened to me during my time in high school is I had three great coaches. I had a soccer coach that really allowed me to be an athlete and not necessarily a soccer player. You know, you live in a world now where soccer players are asked to play all the time. He just let me play soccer during the fall, which was good. I wasn't great at it, but I really enjoyed the sport and I kind of grown up playing it. I had a great basketball coach and Coach Zing, who really, you know, I think was just a great X and O's guy for the basketball court and really cared a lot about his players. And I think, I just learned a lot. And then we had Coach King, who was my high school lacrosse coach, who, was just a, you know, just a great person. And, you know, our senior year, and I joke about this with our guys, and I just talked to our guys recently about it. Our senior year, we were not predicted to be that great. But we ended up being, you know, make it to the semifinals in 1989. And I think part of that was, we had a bunch of guys on that 1989 team that just, you know, actually went up playing a lot of lacrosse in college, but we really cared a lot about it. You know, we were all best friends. And the story I just told our guys recently, you know, before our first game of the year, we had this field that was on the side of West Morris that was kind of our showcase field on campus, or on the grounds. And we weren't, the school rule was if there's any standing water on that field, we couldn't play. And so, the day of our first game, we were playing Morristown High School. And we got the whole team together, and we had guys with shop vacs, and we had guys that went to the sawmill in town and got sawdust. And we literally worked on the field from like sunrise to when our AD, Dr. Pooley, came by, and he couldn't say no to us. You know, there was no way he could say, guys, I got to move this game to next week. He let us play, you know, and the field turned into a quagmire as we went. But, I will never forget that moment. It was because, you know, that's what we were passionate about. We wanted to play lacrosse that day. And we were fortunate that our athletic director and our coach saw that a bunch of 16, 17-year-old kids were doing something that was very right. And I'll never forget that moment, you know. And, you know, just yesterday, you know, we get 5 inches of snow here Sunday night. And, you know, our guys in between classes were on the field yesterday, helping us move snow. And I think that goes back to something I learned from those people a long, long time ago back in Long Valley, New Jersey. And if it's something you love to do, you might as well give it your best effort. And you know, our guys do that. And I think I learned that a lot from being coming from that high school and that neck of the woods for sure.
Well, Coach, thanks. That's a really great kind of full circle story there. So, again, thanks a lot for you know, kind of coming on and giving us a little bit of a rundown of your program this this week. And best of luck in these two daunting but hopefully, you know, good games, I guess, for you guys to lay ahead.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Take care. Inside Lacrosse Podcast.